super grip to make sure it was engaged. With my left hand, I lifted the latch. I wasn't going to try to do it gently. Once you've decided you're going in, you might as well get it over with. I pushed the door open a few inches, and at the same time brought my left hand up and switched the torch on, using my body to open the door fully. As I came into the room, I moved to the right to avoid silhouetting my body in the doorway. I three-quarters closed the door with my shoulder, and the torchlight hit a pile of men's clothes on the floor. I also saw a watch and a glass of water on a bedside table. There was a shape in the bed. I knew straight away by its size that it wasn't Sarah. The body stirred, maybe as a reaction to the change in air pressure as the door opened, or the fact that light was shining in his face. As he turned, I saw that he was bald and dark-skinned and had a moustache. It was Boss Man. His eyes opened fully as he settled. He wouldn't be able to see me, just the torchlight. I moved quickly, getting my left knee on one side of him and my right on the other so I was astride him, pushing him down onto the bed. He was pinioned by the sheet across his chest and gave a quick grunt of protest. I dropped the torch onto the bed. I didn't want him to see my face, and in any case, I didn't need light for what I was about to do. With the pistol jammed against his clenched teeth, he gave a long, drawn-out groan as he tried to resist. I got hold of the back of his head with my left hand and forced the weapon down harder. The metal of the silencer scraped against his teeth, and he eventually opened up. I pushed the muzzle in until it was nearly at the back of his throat, and the suppressor was filling his mouth good style. He struggled on for a while, not trying to escape, just wanting to work out what was going on and to breathe. He was flapping and snorting like a horse. I moved with his chest as it went up and down. At length, he lay back. No one will fuck around once they realize they have a pistol in their mouth. I leaned towards his left ear. In my bad, fluctuating American accent, I whispered, "If you speak English, nod slowly." He did. I could feel the pistol moving up and down. I heard him slurping and retching as his Adam's apple worked overtime. With his jaw wide open, he'd lost the ability to swallow. "You have two choices," I said. "Die if you don't help me. Live if you do. Do you understand?" It's always better to take your time at moments like this. If you've got somebody who's flapping and you say, "Okay, where's Sarah?" He can't talk because he's got this thing stuck in his mouth, so he gets all confused about what you expect of him. It's better to do it as a process of elimination. And then you know you have the right information. That is, if he knows it in the first place. There was still a bit of hesitation here. He was still flapping too much and not thinking enough. I said, "Do you understand?" And underlined the point with a jab of the pistol. He finally got the message, and I felt the pistol move up and down. His body smelled of shampoo and soap. Shame he hadn't cleaned his teeth. His breath smelled like roadkill. Now that he understood the facts of life, I whispered, "You've got one woman in the house, yes?" I felt his immediate sense of relief. His body relaxed. It wasn't him I wanted. He nodded. "One woman." He nodded again. "Is she on this floor?" The pistol shook from side to side. "Is she on the floor above this one?" "Up and down." "Do you know which room she's in?" I could hear his breathing and slurping, but there was just a touch too much hesitation. He was thinking about what to say. He shook his head, slowly. I gave a weary sigh and said, "Then you're no good to me, and I'm going to kill you. I think you're lying." No response. I said, Last chance. Do you know what room she's in? I started to rise. He got the idea. He nodded. I came back down to his ear. Good. Now, think about this. Is she on the left-hand side of the corridor as you go along it from the stairs? I was assuming it was the same sort of configuration upstairs as down. I didn't know yet, but it was a good enough place to start. He thought about it and nodded. Good. Is it the first door on the left? He shook his head. Saliva was oozing out of his mouth and running down his chin. I could feel his chest rising and falling more and more quickly. He was fighting to get oxygen in, and there were too many obstructions. Is she in the second door on the left? He nodded. Good. If you're lying, I'll be back, and I'll kill you. He nodded that he understood. Semi-choking on the suppressor because I pushed it a little more to the back of his throat, just to the point where he was starting to gag. At the same time, I reached down with my left hand, closed it around the taser, slid off the safety catch, and gave him the good news right on the pectoral muscle. I counted the crackle for about 5 seconds. If I remembered correctly, that should result in the person being dazed for some minutes afterwards. He jerked about, and then got very dazed indeed. I climbed off him, picked up the torch, and put it in my mouth, then turned round and started to look for his socks amongst the clothes that were on the floor. I found one, and shoved the toe end of it into his mouth, pulling down on his jaw to force him to take it all. Noise comes from the throat and below, not the mouth. For an effective gag, you have to ram obstructions down there as far as they can go, so that when the person tries to scream, the sound can't amplify in the mouth. A strip of gaffer tape over the face isn't enough to achieve the desired effect. A sock stuffed in the mouth also calms people down, because they become more worried about choking than about raising the alarm. I could hear moans and groans from the back of his throat as he began to come round. I couldn't have him alerting the others, so I gave him another 3-second burst. That settled him down again, and gave me time to finish filling his mouth. Once that was done, I got his shirt from the floor and wrapped the sleeve around his face to form a seal over the sock. I kept his nose free because he had to be able to breathe, but wrapped the sleeve as tightly as I could around his lips. I pulled a leather belt from his trousers, which was about 1.5 inches wide, with a brass buckle, and grabbed the tie-backs from the curtains, lengths of rope with shiny tassels. I tied his knees together with the first tie-back. If you can move your knees, you can crawl and manoeuvre. If not, you haven't got much scope for movement. Next, I tied his ankles together. He was semi-conscious, breathing and moaning in the back of his throat. I turned him over on the bed and got his hands behind him, tying them tightly together with the belt, making sure that I'd left the buckle and some of the other end free. It was going to hurt him, and he was going to have hands like balloons by the morning. But he'd live. By now my breathing was almost as laboured as his. This was physical stuff, spinning him round, trying to do it quickly, but also trying to keep everything quiet to cut down on noise. I got hold of his shoulders and pulled him down gently, so that his head and shoulders were on the floor. Then I grabbed his legs and dropped them down too. There was still a little bit of moaning, especially when I got hold of his ankles and brought them up towards his tied hands. I put the ends of the belt around the tie-back that secured his wrists, did up the buckle, and that was him, trussed up like an oven-ready chicken. He was coming round again. I held the taser on his thigh and gave him the good news for another 5 seconds. He tried to scream, but the sock did its stuff. As I lifted the taser away from him, I still had the button depressed. The bolt of electricity crackled brightly as it arced between the two terminals. The glow that it cast added to the torchlight, and I could see the suit carrier, now open, hanging on the wardrobe. Inside was a grey business suit, white shirt and patterned tie, already knotted and hanging round the hanger. I got to the door, checked the corridor and turned left towards the stairs. This flight was different. The stairs turning back on themselves to reach the top floor. As I climbed and turned left up the next flight, the distant TV mush disappeared. Its place gradually taken by the constant bass drum rhythm of rain bouncing off the roof. It was almost soothing. I got to the top and lay down on the stairs. I looked left along the corridor, but this time there was no light to help me and I couldn't see any coming from under the doors. I twisted the mag light and headed directly to the second door on the left. There was no rug up here. I moved slowly. Between the first and second door against the wall, there was a semicircular table with a lamp on it. I got to the door. It was exactly the same as the one downstairs, with the latch on the right. I crossed over and got against the right-hand wall. I just had to get in there, be hard and aggressive, grab her and get out before my new mate downstairs started trying to become Houdini. I listened for a few seconds, just in case she was in there expecting me and loading up her 53. Then, with the mag lights in my mouth, I put my hand on the latch and pressed. There was a small bundle in the bed, and I knew at once that it was Sarah. I could smell the familiar fragrance of her deodorant. It was the only one that didn't leave white powder marks on her clothes. I started moving towards her. Her jeans were on the floor, crumpled, as if they'd just been pulled down and stepped out of. There was a bedside cabinet with some water and headache pills by the lamp. I was going to have to grip her so hard that she thought there were 20 people piling in on her. I had to confuse her, scare her, phase her, because I knew that if I didn't, she was more than capable of killing me. Chapter 17. I moved towards her, taser in my left hand, pistol in my right, torch in my mouth, adjusting my head to keep the beam pointing into her face. The sound of the rain hitting the window was louder than my footsteps. She started to turn, and her eyes reacted to the light as I moved the final pace, dropped the pistol on the bed, then smacked my open hand over her mouth. She gave a muffled scream and fought against me in her mouthful of blood-stained glove. The torch got knocked sideways, scraping against my teeth as she thrashed about. I heard the pistol fall off the bed and onto the floor. I hit the taser's on button and her eyes widened as she saw the current crackling between the metal prongs, inches from her nose. Then she hit her own on button and began struggling so violently I thought she was having a fit. She got the good news in her armpit. The 100,000 volts shot through her body and fucked her up big time. With her body jolting up and down, I was finding it hard to keep my hand on her mouth to dampen the scream. The bed springs sounded as if she was having sex. 5 seconds later, she was a rag doll, just a little groan as she fell back onto the bed. It wouldn't last for long. I needed the pistol. I got the torch out of my mouth and retrieved it from under the bed, shoving it into the waistband of my jeans. Next, as weak coughing told me she was starting to regain her senses, I got out the 2 sleeves I'd cut from my shirt. She coughed again, and I looked at her. The bedclothes had been kicked off during the struggle, and she lay spread out on the mattress like a starfish, in just a white t-shirt and white knickers. Outside, the wind had come back. I could hear it thrashing the rain against the windows even more now. With the torch back in my mouth, I was soon dribbling and breathing like the boss man downstairs. I prized open her jaw and started ramming the 1st sleeve into her mouth. She was just conscious enough to realize what was happening and tried her best to resist. I had to give her another 2 or 3 seconds with the taser, getting my hands out of her mouth just in time as it snapped shut in the first of another series of convulsions. When she relaxed, I stuffed in the material until it must have gone halfway down her throat. I then got the 2nd sleeve, placed it over her mouth like a conventional gag and tied the ends tightly at the back of her neck with a double knot. There was going to be no noise from her now. I pulled the belt from her jeans and used it to tie her hands together, front loading her. She was now ready to go, and so was I. Nearly. All that was left was to gather up as much of her ID as I could find. A T-104 meant leaving no trace, which wasn't going to be easy. I didn't know where all her stuff was. I hoped it wouldn't be too much of a drama if anything was left behind. With any luck, she'd be using cover docs that she'd got by chatting up some gay woman in an Australian bar. I found her bag on the floor near the bottom of the bed. It was a small black nylon affair with a shoulder strap. Inside was a nylon sports-type purse, passport, and a few loose dollar bills. I quickly scanned the rest of the room with my torch. A green sports bag lay open on the floor, and clothes were strewn all around it. A glint of metal caught my eye. I shone the torch beyond the bag and saw the barrel of an HK-53. Its black parkerization had been worn off over the years. I also saw four mags, taped together to form two sets of ammo. She started moaning and retching, trying to expel the material from her mouth. She still didn't know who was doing this to her. It was too dark, and even if she could see straight at the moment, all she was getting was a powerful torch beam in her eyes as I moved towards her, putting her bag strap over my head. It was time to grip her and get the fuck out of there before the authorities screamed in, or whatever was going to happen after 5 a.m. I got back to her, switched off the torch, and put it in my jeans. With my left hand, I got hold of her at the point where the back of her head met the neck, and banged the web of my right hand hard up under her nose. I felt her jolt as it slammed into her face. Bending my legs, I pushed up with both hands, making sure that all the pressure of the lift was against her nostrils. Her hands raised, then fell again. She couldn't resist. She had to go with it, her moans of pain getting louder. I got her sitting bolt upright and put the crook of my left arm around the front of her neck, jamming her tight against me. Her face was still tilted upwards. With the pistol in my right hand, I moved my right forearm behind her neck to complete the headlock, and stood up. She was fighting for oxygen. No way was she not coming with me. I started to move, and she didn't like it at all. Her back arched more as her legs hit the floor, and she tried to take more weight off her neck. She was recovering quicker now that she was in pain, but I had total control. If she fought back too strongly, I'd just give her another bullet in with a taser. But that would be a last resort. I wanted to move quickly, not be dragging a dead weight. I made my way across the room and, checking the pistol's safety with my right thumb, opened the door. The corridor was still dark and silent. I reinforced my hold on her by jerking my knees and gripping her neck more tightly. She seemed to be concentrating on holding onto my left arm so that she could relieve some of the pressure on her neck. Probably too worried about being asphyxiated to resist. I stepped out into the corridor, her head still jammed against my chest, the rest of her body following behind me. She gave no resistance at all, and once we got past the table, I understood why. She started to buck and spark up, her legs kicking out as she held onto my arm for even more support. She kicked the table sideways, knocking the lamp onto the floor. Its stained glass lampshade shattered across the floorboards. It had gone noisy. No need to tiptoe around anymore. I started to motor towards the stairs, dragging her with me. At first, she continued to buck and kick, her feet banging on the wooden flooring. Then she must have realized that if she didn't help herself by trying to keep her back arched and her legs on the floor, she could break her own neck. We got to the staircase, and I was just about to turn right and go down when I heard the sound of a latch lifting to my left. I swung round as the door opened and light burst from the room. Sarah swung with me, a muffled scream coming from her throat as the movement wrenched her neck. It was the American. His reactions were quick. I fired into the door as he shoved it closed. I gripped her and started moving aggressively down the stairs. The American was thumping on the floor, screaming, "Wake up! Attack! Attack! Wake up!" Sarah's heels and calves were taking a good hammering. She was squealing like a stuck pig inside the gag and trying to tense up her muscles to help with the pain. We were sounding like a herd stampeding, with my heavy footsteps and her feet bouncing off the wood. I didn't look behind me. I just ran for it. I wasn't going to head for the fire exit on the next floor, as I'd thought I might. There were too many rooms on either side of that corridor, and I had no idea if there was anyone else in the building that I hadn't accounted for. The way my luck was going, there was bound to be. My new plan was to get down to the garage, a route I knew, then just make a run for it. I turned right to go down the next flight of stairs. As I took the first few steps, I could see that the second floor corridor below me was now lit up like a football stadium. Above me, the American screamed, "Sarah! One of them has Sarah! They have Sarah!" From below me, a voice shouted above the babble of the TV. "Where? Where are they? Help me here!" I froze no more than 6 feet from the bottom of the stairs. It wouldn't be long before these two got their act together and I'd be dead. I just wanted 5 seconds in which to calm down and think. A shadow approached from the left on the corridor below. It turned into Boss Man, now in jeans and carrying an HK-53. Fuck. How did he get free so quickly? I kept looking down on him, weapon in the aim, gripping Sarah even tighter to stop her disrupting my sight picture. He turned and looked up. I blatted 3 quiet rounds until he went down. Not dead, just screaming and writhing on the ground. The 53 clattered down the stairs to the floor below. Above me, the American half groaned, half yelled, "What's happening? Talk to me! Someone talk to me here!" I went down more stairs, stopped short of the corridor and, still holding Sarah with my left arm, put my pistol round to the left and loosed off the rest of the rounds blindly. Being suppressed, it wouldn't have quite the same effect as rounds going off with a loud report. But people would hear them splintering the woodwork and get the general idea. I willed Boss Man to carry on screaming and scare the shit out of anyone listening. Maybe it worked, because there was still no firing back at me. Either that, or there were no more people. I ran out of rounds and started to change mags. Pressing the mag release catch, I jerked my hand downwards to help the mag fall out. It hit the stair and bounced down onto Boss Man's back. I looked at him, face down on the floor, his blood spilling across the polished wood. Then, turning to look up the stairs, waiting for the American, I placed a new mag into the weapon right next to Sarah's face. As I turned back to check chamber, we had eye contact for the first time. The shock of recognition was plain to see. Her eyes were wide with amazement and disbelief. I looked away, more concerned about the job in hand. I moved straight across the gap without looking, just making sure I didn't trip over Boss Man, whose screams were fading. I rammed down the last flight of stairs, feeling and hearing Sarah bumping down behind me, sometimes lifting up her feet to take the strain, sometimes stumbling. I carried on straight across the room towards the garage stairs, passing too thin to Wynne and his friends. Shouts and screams came from the TV as we passed the kitchen door. Just as I neared the bottom of the flight and was about to enter the garage, I heard shouting upstairs, and then 4 or 5 rounds went off. I wondered what the American was firing at. Then I realized he'd probably run downstairs, seen figures by the TV in semi-darkness, and fired off at them straight away without looking. The flickering light from the screen and the scariness of the situation had probably got him jumping. It certainly had me. I closed the door behind me, to add a bit more to the confusion. He wouldn't dare barge straight through. He couldn't guarantee what was on the other side. We moved alongside the explorer, and I could hear the American's voice above me. I couldn't make sense of what he was saying, but he didn't sound too happy about the way his day was shaping up. The rain stung as it lashed my face. It was then that I remembered the Bergen, but it was too late now. Fuck it. I turned left, towards the other house, and had taken no more than 3 steps when the proximity lights came on. With my head down, I started pumping, but was restricted by the weight I was dragging. I'd covered maybe 10 or 15 meters when the first burst from a 53 was fired from one of the upper floors. Its short barrel and the power of the round makes the muzzle emit a fearsome flash. It's the only weapon I'd ever seen that looks like the ones you see in films. It was great for close-up work, as it scared the shit out of people. I kept on running. I'd be out of the light in a few more strides. As soon as we hit darkness, I glanced back. All the lights in the house were blazing. Smoke was drifting from the windows on the second floor. It looked almost like that house in the Amityville Horror. Shrouded in rain and mist, except that it wasn't mist. It was cordite from the rounds. A couple of lights were on upstairs in the place next door. My new plan was to get in there, point a big fat gun at them, take their pickup and fuck off. The next thing I knew, however, the external light on the family's 4x4, mounted on the driver's side wing, burst into life, and a 1,000,000 candle power beam sliced through the darkness towards us. A man's voice shouted a warning.
"Don't come near. Stay away. I'm armed. I've called the police."
For good measure, he wanged down a couple of rounds at us from a rifle. He probably had "My land, my country, my gun" on his bumpers, and a few other stickers that he'd bought at gyms. But he was protecting his family, and that was a fair one. I felt a thump as one of the rounds rammed into the ground far too close to me. Either he was good, and he meant to aim a warning shot, or he was trying to hit us, and this time we'd been lucky. I didn't want to find out which. I jinked left and ran between the two houses, uphill, towards the dirt track. Change of plan again. We were going to make it on foot back to my car, as I'd been aiming to do all along, but without all this drama. Another rifle shot rang out, but this time I didn't hear the answering thud. There was the burst of a 53. Fuck knows where that went. I got to the track, crossed it, and stopped to try and assess the situation. We were in darkness and on higher ground. I heard shots and saw a couple of foot-long muzzle flashes coming from the direction of the target house, and more from the area around the pickup. Shotgun Ned must be zapping and shouting at anything that moved. His spotlight swept left and right, looking for targets. It wasn't the only light I could see. Red and blue flashing lights were glistening in the rain on the other side of the lake, and I suddenly realized that I stood more chance of being struck by lightning than I did of getting back to my car. Acting as the situation demanded, I changed plan again. We were going to get out of here on foot. I stood still, knees bent, waiting to regain my breath. It was colder than before, and the wind and rain were loud against the leaves. I started moving through the forest again. Sarah's bare flesh was getting zapped left and right by branches, and I could hear her suffering. I put my head down and pumped uphill, leaving everybody down there to get on with it. It seemed that my lucky number for house clearing was the same as for shopping trolleys. 0. Chapter 18. I gripped Sarah and plunged on, slipping and skidding on the wet mush, stumbling over rocks and fallen branches, flailing to regain my footing. She was screaming as best she could beneath the gag, partly because of the tree branches that whipped at her bare body, and the ground cutting her legs, partly just trying to keep her airway clear. At least I knew she was breathing. I tripped again and went down. The pain as my knees hit rock made them feel as if they were on fire. She moaned loudly under the gag as she took the brunt of my fall, and she had to arch her back to relieve the strain on her neck. I stayed on my knees, screwing my face up as I took the pain, waiting for it to die down. There was nothing I could do but accept it. I just hoped I hadn't smashed a kneecap. My chest was heaving up and down as I tried to catch my breath. Sarah gave up the struggle to keep her body off the ground. She collapsed in the mud beside and slightly below me, her head still in the neck hold, resting in my lap and moving up and down in unison with my breathing. There was plenty of commotion going on behind. The odd rifle round and automatic burst, followed by shouts. Looking down and behind me through the trees and rain, I could make out the lights of both houses some 150 meters away. I wasn't in dead ground yet, and it was going to be light soon. I needed to get distance. Shotgun Ned was having a ballistic fit, screaming and hollering, like something out of one of the movies for guys who like guy movies. I couldn't tell whether he was enjoying it or hating it, but he was vocal. That was for sure. I got myself to my feet, pulling Sarah upright with me, and started moving again. I could hear rotor blades in the sky behind. Moments later, a blindingly bright night sun searchlight penetrated the darkness and began to sweep the area towards the houses as the helicopter hovered over the lake. It wasn't venturing too near the scene just yet, probably for fear of someone taking a pot shot. More gunshots echoed in the background. Almost immediately I heard returned bursts of fire and saw the brilliant, almost white, muzzle flash of a .53. I turned back and started to move off. My throat was parched. God knew what Sarah's was like. She must be in shit state. I kept checking behind me as I moved and could see the lights in the houses slowly fading into the dark and rain. We would be in dead ground soon. As I moved, the night sun briefly lit up the area around me as it realigned itself while the heli orbited the lake, making hundreds of shadows in the trees as the rotor blades groaned, trying to keep it in a stable position in the wind. The campers were no doubt outside their tents, trying to watch the reenactments of the Waco siege from the safety of the other side of the lake. Pleased that their washed-out holiday had turned out quite exciting after all. Below me, I could only see the flat roofs of the two houses. More blue flashing lights cut through the trees, but this time on my side of the lake, coming from the left along the track. Yet more police vehicles were also arriving in the car park across the lake. They'd all got here too fast. My guess must have been correct. My report must have confirmed Elizabeth and Lynn's speculation about what was going on, and they wanted Sarah out before the 7th Cavalry moved in. It seemed that I'd fucked that up a bit. It wouldn't be long before the area was choked with police and FBI trying to stop the Third World War. Shotgun Ned would be a national hero after this. He'd probably be given his own fucking talk show. The police, however, had mortgages and kids to think about. While it was dark, they would do no more than contain the area. By first light, however, they'd have all their shit together, maybe even have their army or National Guard on standby. I crested a rise, and as I moved downhill, it blocked out all the noise behind me. My first priority was to put as much distance as possible between us and the target before first light. As I moved, I could feel Sarah shivering and shaking beside me, screaming inside her gag. If I was feeling bad, she must be in shit state. I crossed another small ridge, started to move downhill, and lost my footing in the mud. As I slithered and tumbled, Sarah fought to break free and save herself. I had a split second in which to decide whether to hold on to her or let go. The decision was made for me. We took another half tumble and slide and came to an abrupt stop against a tree trunk. I'd landed on my back with Sarah on top of me, her wet hair in my face, breathing hard through her nose like a Grand National winner. My pistol, which had been pushed into the front of my jeans, had gone. I let go of Sarah. She wasn't going anywhere. The weapon was the priority. I never wanted to be without one again. Maglite in hand, the bulb covered by my fingers to minimize the spill of light, I crawled around on my hands and knees, sifting through the leaves and mud like a kid searching for a lost toy. My knee caught a metal edge as I moved. I checked the safety, wiped off the worst of the mud, and shoved it back into my jeans. Scrambling back towards Sarah, I noticed she was breathing much more loudly. That wasn't right. Then I heard a loud, hoarse whisper. "What the fuck do you think you're doing? Get this belt off me, now!" She had somehow untied the gag and was coughing and trying to relieve the soreness in her mouth. "Come on!" She lifted her hands. "Get this fucking thing off!" She couldn't see it, but I was trying to hide a laugh. People with accents like hers shouldn't swear. It just doesn't work. Besides, she was practically naked, streaked with mud, yet trying to order me around. "Do it, Nick, hurry. We must keep moving." There were no more weapon reports from behind us, and a loud hailer was now being used, probably to give instructions to anyone left in the house. The rain prevented me from hearing what was being said. The heli was out there somewhere, the throbbing of its rotors carried in on gusts of wind. "What does she mean? We need to keep moving." I looked at her and couldn't help it. I started to laugh, and that pissed her off even more. "Don't be ridiculous. Hurry up and untie me." She held her arms out. "Get me out of here before this becomes even more of a fucking fiasco." The rattle of the helicopter getting closer made us both shut up. It was hard to tell which direction it was coming from. I was peering up, but could see jack shit. "Come on, get this belt off me and give me your coat." She started to use her teeth to pull the knot apart. It wasn't working. The leather was too tight and wet, and she was shivering too much to get a good grip. The helicopter roared overhead. I caught a glimpse of its navigation lights through the trees. At least it wasn't hovering or moving in a search pattern. Not yet, anyway. I guessed it would be soon. I could see the glimmer of first light beyond the canopy. She wanted my attention again. "Nick, get this off me and give me your coat. Please." Her arms were still thrust towards me. I grabbed hold of the belt and started to drag her along in the mud. First light had started to penetrate to the forest floor, relieving the gloom just enough to show my footprints. The rain was starting to ease off. The noise of it hitting the leaves was dying down, along with the wind in the trees. I was starting to feel depressed. I was soaking wet, cold, and confused. What was worse, we were leaving an unmissable trail in the mud. She could obviously see that I was in no mood for discussion as we moved, and she shut up. We came over another rise. Down below us, about 100 or 200 meters away at the bottom of a steep gradient, was a river. Maybe 30 meters wide, it was in full flood. A maelstrom of fast-flowing water and foam. As we scrambled downhill, all I could hear was the rush of water in front of us. Sarah called out, "Slower, slower," trying to get her footing. I wasn't listening. We had to find a way across. With luck, it would be the psychological boundary of the search. Hopefully, they would start from the house and fan out as far as the bank, assuming that no one would be mad enough to try and cross. At that moment, I had to be the only person in the world with a good thing to say about El Niño. In theory, It should have been nice and sunny at this time of the year in the Carolinas. Conditions like this would slow the searches down, and if the weather closed in any further, the heli might not be able to fly. Closer to the water, the tree canopy started to thin. Out in the open, it was virtually daylight, and looking up, I could see a really thick, grey, miserable sky. It had stopped raining. But in dense woodland, you'd never know that. All the moisture is held on the leaves, and it still works its way down to the floor. What the fuck? I was soaked to the skin anyway. Sarah's hair was wet and flat against her head. Dried blood ringed her nostrils. I must have slammed my hand into her face quite hard on the bed. She was bleeding from several cuts on her legs, with goosebumps the size of peanuts. And, in any other circumstances, she'd have needed hospital attention. She was covered in mud, sand, bits of leaves and twigs, and shivering uncontrollably in her drenched and now transparent knickers and T-shirt. I let go of the belt and studied the river, trying to look for a safe place to cross. It was pointless. If I'd doubted the strength of the currents, I only had to look at the chunks of uprooted tree that were surging downstream and crashing over the rocks. Wherever I chose, it was going to be a major drama. So what was new? Sarah was switched on. She knew what I was thinking. She sat in a fetal position against the rock on the bank, with her arms wrapped around her legs, trying to cover her body for warmth. She looked at the river, then at me. "No, Nick. Are you mad? I'm not going, not here. Why don't we..." I cut her off mid-sentence, grabbing hold of the belt and dragging her a short distance back into the canopy for cover. I didn't talk to her. There was too much stuff churning round in my head. Instead, I started to pull out my shirt from my trousers, then the bottoms of my jeans where they'd been tucked into my boots. I undid the cuffs on my jacket sleeves until everything was nice and loose, and water could flow more freely around me. If your shirt is tucked in when you swim, the weight of trapped water that collects can slow you down. Then it might drown you. The gloves came off. It was pointless wearing them at the moment, and besides, they looked ridiculous. Sarah was all right. She had fuck all on anyway. I stuffed all my Docs plus hers into one of the gloves, then pushed that inside the other one and put it back in my jacket. I wondered about the bag. Fuck it. I'd have to take it with me. I didn't want to leave any more sign than was necessary. The wind had started to gust strongly, and the trees at the top of the canopy on the opposite side of the river were bending and swaying. I looked at Sarah hunching down behind a tree for shelter. Only feet away, the water crashed angrily against the rocks. I looked along the opposite bank, following the river's current, trying to work out where we might land up. I could see downstream for about 250 meters. Then the river bent round to the right and disappeared from view. The opposite bank was about 2 or 3 feet above water level. With plenty of grab provided by foliage and tree roots exposed by the current as it carved into the soil. I had to assume the worst, that there was a massive waterfall just after the bend. And that meant that we had just 250 meters in which to make our way across and get out. The ambient temperature wasn't freezing, but it was bitterly cold. On land, we wouldn't die of exposure if we kept moving, but the river would be another matter. Sarah saw me looking at the water and back at her. She dropped her head and buried it in her arms. The gesture was one of resignation and recognition of the fact that, if she was telling the truth about wanting to get away, I was her only means of escape. The heli was somewhere behind us, doing its stuff between the river and the houses. I couldn't tell exactly where it was, but it had to be near or I wouldn't be able to hear the rotor blades groaning as it tried to keep a low hover. I went over to her, grabbed hold of the belt and pulled her to her feet. She looked into my eyes.
Nick, why not take this thing off? Please. I'm not going anywhere, am I?
I ignored her. Gripping the belt with my left hand, I moved down to the water's edge, keeping my eyes lifted to the sky. I tried to convince myself that the only thing that mattered right now was the helicopter. A spit of rocks extending about 5 meters out looked as if it would give us some sort of platform to begin our crossing. Water sluiced over the top, and there was no way of telling how deep it was on either side. I hoped Sarah could swim, but if she couldn't, tough, she should have said. I looked at her eyes, and suddenly saw fear there. Then I looked at the river again. It was a fair one. There was no way I couldn't remove the belt. I needed to keep her alive. Her death had to be at a time and place of my choosing. As I undid the knot, she said very quietly, "Thank you." I caught her eye, trying to read the message there, then nodded and moved on, throwing the belt into the bag. She stepped gingerly over the small stones at the water's edge.
"Come on," I snapped.
She kept her head down, watching her footing.
"I'm trying. It's hurting my feet."
As we started to wade in, she gasped,
"Oh, fuck, it's so cold."
She was right. The water temperature had to be near zero. I told myself just to get in there, get it done, and worry about warming up again on the other side. I fought the current until I was up to my waist, with Sarah behind me grasping the strap of her bag, which was still over my shoulder. Then, with my next step, I was into fast-flowing water, the current tearing at my leg, threatening to throw me off balance. I grabbed her hand. Whether to support myself or to help her, I didn't know. But no sooner had I lifted my other leg than the weight of water whipped it away from under me and I was being swept downstream. I still clung to Sarah, both of us kicking and thrashing to keep afloat and make some progress towards the opposite bank. But the current was starting to drag me under. If you're trapped against a rock by water that's just half a meter high and moving at 12 miles per hour, you'd need to be able to bench press 550 pounds to lift yourself away. We were no contest for the tons of water surging downstream. My head was forced under, and I swallowed a mouthful of freezing river. I kicked back to the surface, forcing myself to breathe in through my nose, only to choke as I inhaled yet more water. I let go of her. We each had to fight our own battle now. She looked at me, her eyes the size of saucers as she realized what I'd done. That wasn't my problem. It would only become one if I couldn't find her body before they did. She still had to disappear without trace. I saw her through wet, blurred vision, trying to keep her head up, kicking and swimming and wading like a seal. Then she was sucked under by the current, and I couldn't tell how far across I was. The water kept taking me under, and I was more concerned about sucking in air than getting to the other side. I couldn't see Sarah at all now, but there was nothing I could do about that. I was in enough shit of my own. As I came up again and snatched a lungful of air, I heard a scream.
"Oh God! Oh God!"
I looked around for her, but saw nothing above the torrent. I was dragged back down and inhaled more river water. Scrabbling my way to the surface, I saw that this time I was almost at the far side. The current wasn't dying down, though, because the river curved around to the right, and I was on the outside of the bend, where the force of the water was at its fiercest. An eddy caught me, and the momentum threw me against the bank. I threw out my hands, trying to grasp an exposed tree root or an overhanging branch, anything I could. I shouted for Sarah, but all I got in reply was another mouthful of river. I coughed, trying to force my eyes open again, but they stung too much. thrashing around blindly, my left hand connected with something solid. I made a grab, but whatever it was gave way. The next thing I knew, my right arm had hooked into a large tree root. The current swung me round and pressed me against the bank, and my feet connected with solid ground. I clung to the roots and took deep breaths to slow myself down. Downstream, nothing was moving in the water but branches and lumps of wood. I struggled against the weight of water until I could reach with my free hand and grab another root higher up the bank. I finally hauled myself up until only my feet were left in the water, being forced sideways by the current. One more grab and pull, and I was lying on the bank, fighting for breath. I'd never felt such relief. I lay there for more than a minute, coughing up water and slowly feeling some strength return to my limbs. As my head cleared, I realized my problems weren't over. I'd now have to find Sarah, and she could be anywhere downstream. Clearing the banks would expose me to view from the ground, and the river was a natural route for any follow-up to be taking. As if that wasn't bad enough, the heli, if it came back, would ping me at once. There was nothing I could do about any of that. I just had to get on with it and retrieve what I could from this gang fuck. Turning my head, I could make out the river behind me, blurred by the water in my eyes. There was still no sign of Sarah. My soaking clothes weighed me down as I started to stumble along the bank, leaning over the edge from time to time to double-check that she wasn't concealed behind rocks or in some kink in the ground below me. If I couldn't find her, and she was discovered downstream or even on the coast, I'd just have to accept that it was a big-time fuck-up. However, not yet. As I moved, I kept my eyes skinned for somewhere to hide her body if she was dead. Hiding her wouldn't be the ideal solution, but there was fuck all else I could do. It would slow me down, carrying her out of the area, and I could always come back in a month or two and finish the job. It needed to be a spot that I could ID at a later date, and perhaps after a change of season, and one that wasn't near a hiker's route or a watercourse. As the current reached the bend and changed direction, its noise became almost deafening. I followed round, the dead ground gradually coming into view. I couldn't believe it. Just 300 meters further downstream, resting on timber supports driven into the riverbed, was a small footbridge. The story of my life. If I'd been looking for one, it wouldn't have existed. I stopped, looked, and listened. The bridge would be on their maps, and anyone sent to follow us would use it to cross. As I got to within maybe 150 meters of the structure, I could see that it was made of three thick wooden supports rising up from the river on each side. The walkway, made of what were probably old railway sleepers, was maybe 2 meters above that. In any search pattern, the police would use this bridge as a key point, somewhere that it would be natural to go to. Maybe they had already identified it and had a team hidden, waiting for us to cross. Should I move into the canopy a bit, and then come back to the river further down once I'd boxed round it? No good. I needed to search the whole bank. The way things were going, she was probably just a meter from the bridge. Dead. I watched for a while longer. The wind bent the treetops, and the water crashed along at warp speed. At first, I thought it was the white water pushing itself against the middle support, with the occasional plume of foam being thrown into the air. It wasn't. It was Sarah, clinging to the post and reaching up, trying to make the 2 meters to safety. Time and again her hand moved up the support, only to be ripped away again as the current got hold of her. For a split second I hoped she'd be washed away. Then I could concentrate on saving my own arse and getting away, taking any flack when I got back to the UK. Then reality kicked in. There was still a chance I could pull her out and do my job properly. I moved back into the canopy and made my approach towards the bridge, lying down about 20 meters short for one last look. She wasn't making a sound. Either she was switched on enough to know not to scream, or she was just too scared. I didn't care which, as long as she stayed quiet. There didn't seem to be any other activity, but then again, if the police were switched on, I'd be very lucky to ping them. It was decision time. I could either get her out and complete the task, or let her get carried away and drown. Then it hit me that there was a third option. She could be swept away and survive. I looked around for a branch that was long enough to do the job. It didn't have to be strong, just long. Jumping up, I grasped one with both hands and pulled down with all my weight. Water sluiced onto me from the leaves. The branch snapped. I twisted and pulled, and it finally parted from the tree. I didn't bother stripping it of its smaller branches, just headed down towards the bank. I stopped to pull off first my boots, then my jeans. For a moment I fantasized that maybe I could be doing the world a great service here. Maybe London knew that she was going to be the next Hitler. Then my jacket came off and the wind bit into me. What the fuck was I doing? Freezing cold in the back of beyond, with the police after me, taking my kit off to save a woman's life just so I could kill her somewhere else. I gave myself another reality check. Shut the fuck up, Stone. It's pointless honking. You know it has to be done. I secured my weapon and the contents of my jeans in the bag and put it back over my shoulder. With my boots back on but my jeans and jacket in my hands, I left the canopy and ran out towards the bridge. I must have looked like someone doing a runner after being caught in bed with another man's wife. As I hit the railway sleepers that made up the walkway, I could see her still playing the limpet, the currents pushing her head against the support as she fought to keep it out of the river. She saw me. "Nick! Nick, I'm here! Here!" As if I didn't know. I leaned over the handrail. "Shut up!" I had to holler above the noise of the water as I started to pass down the end of one jean's leg, knotted to help her grip. The other was tied to one of the sleeves of my jacket. I could never remember the name of the knot. If I'd wanted to know it, I would have joined the Navy. The other sleeve also had a knot at the end, to help me. "Take the jean's end only," I shouted. "Now listen to me, okay?" She looked up, shaking the water from her face. Her eyes kept flicking towards the knotted jeans leg that was her lifeline. They were wide with fear. I kept hold of the knotted sleeve as I dangled the material so that it would be easy for her to get hold of, yet still keep in contact with the support. Her teeth made contact with the material first, and she bit down, turning her head to bring it closer to her hands. Once there, I could see by the determination in her expression that she wasn't going to let go. "Sarah, look at me." I wanted her to understand exactly what was expected of her. When people flap, they nod and agree to everything without really understanding what's being said. "I'm going to drop the rest of this lot into the water and retrieve it on the other side of the bridge. When I shout, I want you to let go of the support and just hold onto the jeans, got it?"
"Yes, yes, hurry."
"Here goes." I checked again to see if anyone was watching, then I threw the rest of the makeshift rope under the bridge. I switched to the other side, lying on my stomach on the sleepers and leaning down. My jacket was snaking from side to side in the current. Looking back upstream under the bridge, I could see her coughing and spitting out water, only to take another mouthful. Moving the branch down into the water, I made contact on the third attempt and pulled up the free end of the rope. Wrapping the knotted end round my wrist, I braced myself against the wood supporting the handrail, ready to take the strain. I could no longer see her.
Now, Sarah, now!
She must have let go, and the current swept her under the span.